I realized, you know, that the basis of everything I've always wanted to do was being there for my community, making art for my community, speaking out for my community.
That's ballet dancer, choreographer, and activist Amanda Morgan. And this is Artworks, the weekly podcast from the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Josephine Reed. 24-year-old Amanda Morgan is in the core of the prestigious Pacific Northwest Ballet, based in Seattle. It's one of the largest and best-regarded companies in the United States, with a deep commitment to racial diversity. But although its dancers are comprised of 26% of people of color, Amanda is its only Black female ballet dancer. Add to that her height of 5'10", and you have someone who stands out. But Amanda decided long ago that if you don't see what you want to see around you, create it. And so she has. Finding herself not picked by choreographers, she began to create dances herself. She co-founded a mentorship program between company dancers and students at Pacific Northwest Ballet School. She began the Seattle Project, an interdisciplinary artist collective that presents performing arts to the community. And she spoke about racism at protests in Seattle, calling out the ballet community at large for its lack of racial equity. Amanda is talented, determined, and outspoken. She also loves ballet and loves being part of the Pacific Northwest Ballet family. And it does feel like a family to her. But she's also forthcoming about some of the obstacles she's faced as a Black ballet dancer. For example, as much as she was thrilled to be in the Pacific Northwest Ballet School, she was troubled when, as a student, she watched the company perform and saw no one who looked like her.
It was during Swan Lake specifically, which already is such a classical ballet. Everyone's in white, so it's just very obvious if someone stands out. And I didn't see anyone that looked like me. And everyone in the intermission, all of the girls in my class, they were saying, you know, oh, she's like this one, or like, I'm like this dancer on stage. And I literally went to the bathroom by myself and cried because I was like, I'm not like anyone. Like, I don't think I'm going to end up being able to be in this company because it always seems like you have to be similar to someone in order to get to that level. Or at least that's what I saw at the time. But luckily, Carell Cruz, who's in the company, he was one of the first dancers I saw. And I definitely saw part of myself in him, him being someone that is Cuban and Afro-Caribbean. So I'm lucky that I had him and also Lindsay Deck because they're both tall too. I'm also very tall. So I was trying to not let it get too much in my mind, but there was definitely hard moments.
You have been dancing since you were a child. What was it about ballet that not only drew you in, but made you stay?
So I started dance when I was 2.5, which is quite young. But my mom tells me, ever since I could basically walk, I was always just dancing and super active, super hyper. So she thought to put me in ballet because when she was younger, she did ballet, but then inevitably stopped. And so I went and I just loved it and I stayed in it ever since.
It is an enormous commitment for a child who moves into a professional track as you did. That is such a commitment, not just for you, but for your parents as well, for your mom as well.
Yeah, definitely. It was, I think anyone that does this profession really has to sacrifice certain things when they're get to be a certain age. So in high school, I wasn't always going, you know, to the football games or all of the little hangouts that I would maybe want to have during that time. I was going to ballet class instead and taking the city bus every day, going to school, high school at like 6:30 in the morning, and then I would take the city bus at 1 to get to Seattle around 3. So it was certainly a time during then.
You grew up in Tacoma, Washington, correct?
Yes, yes, I did. Proud to be from Tacoma, born and raised there.
You ended up at the School of American Ballet during the summertime.
Yeah. Basically, my friend that ended up moving to New Jersey, I was still at my old dance studio during this time. I was about 13 years old, and my friend was like, I'm an audition for the School of American Ballet. And I was like, I don't really think I know what that is, but I know it's in New York. And so all my family is actually, they all live in New York. They all immigrated there from Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic. So I always wanted to go to New York, always wanted to dance in New York. So I heard the fact that I was in New York and I auditioned, and it turned out my friend didn't get in, and then I got in, and I was like, well, I think I should go. And then I went, and it was really such an amazing experience. It was so great to just be in the city and also be at such a high caliber school. And a few of my suite mates slash roommates in the summer course were from Pacific Northwest Ballet School. So they told me that I should go and audition for the school because I knew my mom wasn't going to let me stay year round at the School of American Ballet. So right after that, I guess a month after the summer, I auditioned for Pacific Northwest Ballet and got in and started at the school.
You were apprenticed at Pacific Northwest Ballet, and then you were asked to join the company. Can you tell me about that moment? That must have been so big.
Yeah, honestly, with my apprenticeship, getting my apprenticeship was it's an insane story because the day that Peter told another colleague of mine that she got her apprenticeship.
Peter is the artistic director.
Yes, Peter Bull. So Peter Bull told another colleague of mine after a school matinee show that we were doing as professional division students that she got hired. And I was like, oh, well, there's the apprentice contract. I'm not getting it. And that same day, I actually broke my foot. So I was like, I think I'm gonna have to quit. So I was like, all of this work, then for what? You know, like I just think that nothing is gonna work out because I had a broken fifth metatarsal, and I landed it really, really badly. So they thought they're gonna have to put a screw in my foot and all of these things, and they put me in this red cast. So that's kind of what happened, like in around March in 2016, and so then I went in a week later to Peter's office, cast on my foot on his desk, and he said that he was going to save an apprentice contract for me and that he was just waiting for the right moment and that he would let me start when I healed up, which was like honestly the most amazing thing, especially because there were so many people in my class that were so talented, so, so talented. So to take that risk of hiring me, even though I was injured, not knowing when I would get back, when I'd be able to start with the company, he still did it. And so it's one thing that I appreciate so much about him, and I know like that he believes in me because of that moment, especially. And then with the core contract, I think it was just like at PNB, we have a he's not going to just fire an apprentice, I think. Like Peter's very kind and really wants people that he hires, he's intending for them to stay in the company. He's not testing them like that. So I think that I wasn't as scared to like hopefully get a core contract, but once I finally saw it in front of me, it was kind of just like this like, okay, whew, now I can kind of calm down, like I can kind of start my career and get into it. Because apprentice years, it can be all over the place for some people trying to figure out where you fit in and how you're going to do and just learning the law of the place. So, yeah.
Well, how was it fitting in? Because while, what is it, 26% of the dancers at PNB are people of color, you're the only female black dancer. And you're 5'10".
Yeah, that definitely, it was definitely a process. And around that time, I wasn't 5'10". I was, I think, like 5'8½, but I grew like an inch and a half in my apprentice year. So I was falling all over the place my first year in the company. It was so embarrassing, but I was like, you know what? I'm gonna just have to let it go. I kept getting taller, and I was like, all right, we're gonna just have to honestly retrain everything. And there were definitely moments, you know, I wasn't cast as well as the other two girls that got in with me because they were shorter and they fit in the core more. They fit in with the other dancers. I stood out a lot. So I think that was hard for me because I was like, I joined this company and I'm not really dancing that much. Like I want to dance, you know? So that was certainly hard, but I was really grateful my apprentice year, I was even closer to Lindsay Deck and Karell Cruz. They really just always supported me and looked out for me in the company. And it's something that I really appreciate in the beginning of my career.
It seems to me that, you join the corps and you have two tasks. You obviously want to be the best dancer you can be. And you also, in order to dance, you need to fit in as part of the corps. So
Yeah.
I wonder if those two things are not always aligned.
I think, you know, for someone like me, it's definitely not. I think eventually I learned how to tone down my dancing in a way that didn't necessarily tone my artistry down, but it just made me look cleaner so that I would fit in a little bit more with my lankiness. But then when it comes to, you know, just looking different and choreographers coming in, there were a lot of times that choreographers, you know, didn't even cast me at all because I just stood out too much. And they said I wasn't right for the part. I wasn't right for this. So that was kind of what I was experiencing the first 2 years in the Corps. Even now to this day, I still experience it. But it, especially during that time, it was just hard because it was like I kept getting all of these no's or like, you're not enough this, you're not enough that. And I kept seeing other people move past me. And I was like, you know, I don't know if I'm going crazy, but I think I'm really talented. And it's not adding up to me why I'm not getting these opportunities when I finish a show or something and I have audience members coming up to me saying like, oh, you were so wonderful. Like I could pick you right out of the core. It really just made my, you know, my night. And so I was like, you know, if I'm able to do that for audience members, why don't they want to give me more featured roles or why don't they want to showcase me more? And I think it was from there that I kind of started thinking like, you know, if people aren't going to make stuff for me, I can't wait around. Like, I know I'm young, but I'm going to just make it myself. That's kind of where I was at.
Yeah, boy, you didn't waste any time. I mean, you became a member of the company, what, in 2017? And yeah. 2018, you choreographed your first work for PMB.
Yeah, definitely. That work holds a big place in my heart. It was titled Pages, and I made it with a lot of PDs, but I was only a year older than them.
What's a PB?
A PD is a professional division student. So a lot of them I kind of either grew up with or they were like my friends. So I kind of got to really make a piece on my friends and showcase them. And something about that experience felt so good and so fulfilling because I wish that someone would have really done that for me. There's been moments, but I don't think to give someone a narrative and say like, you know, I want you to put yourself into this. And like, what is it that you kind of want to tell an audience that hasn't happened to me yet? So it's a fulfilling thing to be able to do that for other people, especially people younger than you.
Can you describe the difference in the way you feel when you're creating a dance and when you're dancing a work created by somebody else?
You know, that is a great question. I think that I feel somewhat more fulfilled when I'm creating a work because I know that even though they're like the audience is not necessarily seeing me, they're not seeing me on stage. They're seeing what I want to say. They're seeing my ideas, my brain, the way I think. I think a lot of people were somewhat shocked with my pieces at first because they can be a little bit more toned down. They're not as kind of wild as I can be in the roles I've been given. And so people were like, oh, it's a little bit softer or a little bit less like movement-wise. And I was like, well, you know, I'm a multifaceted human. I'm not just this wild, you know, dancer that attacks everything. But also with being a dancer, I think that it's wonderful. It feels wonderful to have someone look at you and want to make something on you. That is, I think every dancer can agree with that. So when that time happens, it feels great. But I would love eventually to have someone want to make something on me that, you know, shows my more vulnerable side, my softer side, my more feminine side. I think that Black women especially, we tend to get kind of pulled in and being strong and fierce and all that, and then we can't break out of that. So that's part of the reason why choreographing feels really nice too, because I can work around anything I want. You know, I can have it be more harsh or more soft or whatever it is.
How do you work with the dancers that you make work on?
So I've always done this. Whenever I start a piece, I have an interview session. So when I say interview session, it's basically like I just ask them questions about either something that's on my mind, a topic. You know, what does it feel like to be an adolescent during this time? That was like one thing I asked all the students. And I asked them, you know, how they were feeling, how they felt like people saw them and how they wanted people to see them, you know, and we kind of just talked about that, exchanged ideas that way. It was very collaborative in that sense, because I think that a lot of times, especially in ballet companies or in companies that like you kind of have to rush and just learn the work or just make it, there's not enough talking about what we're actually doing and why we're doing it and the ideas that are there. At least the dancers, they don't get enough time to really always talk about that type of stuff and really like indulge in that. So I wanted to be able to give my dancers the space to talk about that and to do that as much as they could, because I think that really takes a piece from being good or great to being like excellent.
Very shortly after you began your first work as a choreographer, you wrote that, and I'm quoting you, life has shown me that if you don't see what you want to see around you, create it.
Yeah.
And you've done this in various ways, both in and out of dance.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do what I would have wanted when I was younger, you know, what I would have wanted to see. And also, just like all of us being artists, even though it is very much a personal, individual thing when it comes to our careers, I think that we have to really think about the community, the arts community, the community in general, especially during hard times. The arts is what always brings a community out of hard times in a way. It gives them hope. It lets them contemplate what's going on. It lets them reflect on what's going on. And so I want my career to be that.
Well, you're an artist and you're an activist. You're an artist activist. I think that's fair, correct?
Yeah, it's so weird, like hearing like activists, because like I guess I am, but like it just feels like I'm like, you know, I just feel like it's important to stand up for people that can't necessarily stand up for themselves, and to like, you know, really believe in justice and all of that.
Well, you've spoken at rallies and you've also called out the ballet world for a lack of racial inclusion.
Yeah.
Has PNB been supportive of you in that? I mean, in your outspokenness?
Honestly, like they're probably the best company that's doing this work in the United States, at least ballet company wise, I will say. In the beginning, I was a little disappointed, I'm not gonna lie, because I think everyone was just like, they didn't know what to say. They didn't want to like offend anyone, or they, you know what I mean? I think people were thinking too much about like what donors or what people were gonna think.
I'm sorry, Amanda, when you say in the beginning, are you talking about the protests? Can you be more specific here?
Well, so in the beginning of basically the protest, so like right around the time that George Floyd was killed, we obviously had gone through this pandemic and everyone was being very responsive to that, obviously. There was not one person that wasn't being responsive to that, wasn't saying save the arts, wasn't saying all of these things. But when, you know, George Floyd was killed, there was such a hesitation. And I mean, even some organizations didn't even respond. But there was a hesitation with PNB. They didn't say anything right away. They didn't say, we care about our black and brown lives, our black and brown students right away. So that's what was disappointing to me, especially because I was doing a lot of work at PNB. And at this time, we were on layoff. So we weren't technically working for the company. I started a whole mentorship program for the school with one of my colleagues, Cece Ilyisu. So we were talking to students almost every day for an hour, different levels, just checking in on them, checking in on their mental health, giving them any resources that we could. So Cece Ilyisu and I, we volunteer our time to do that. So it was honestly a slap in the face for them not to say anything. And it took me going out into the streets for the first protest, when literally everything was on fire, basically, for people to even contact me and ask me if I was okay. I remember I yelled at Peter Bull, I yelled at Ellen Walker, you know. But luckily, you know, there's people in the organization that are part of the DEI committee, which I'm also part of,
And
where
that's
it's
diversity and inclusion.
yes, diversity and inclusion. They're doing a lot of great work. They're reaching out to not just people within PMB, but like community members that actually do DEI work. They're actually listening, you know. They're not speaking on behalf of, they're listening. And I don't think I can say that that's happening in the same way in other ballet companies. It really, I don't think it is.
I'm sure you've thought about this, Amanda. What do you think ballet companies need to do going forward to address issues of diversity, of inclusion, of equity?
Yeah, you know, the thing is, it's so layered, right? So
Yeah.
I think everyone just keeps like thinking, oh, you know, like they just need to have more dancers of color. And I was like, that's not enough, honestly. It's not enough. It's not enough to just have a DEI coordinator or whatever. I think that's a good start, but I think that, you know, we need to actually have people of color in the front of the room. How are dancers of color that are coming into these companies going to feel when everyone in the front of the room, everyone that is either choreographing on them or telling them what to do, is still not a person of color? Nothing is going to really change, because still all those people that are there are upholding white supremacy in a way. Not directly, obviously, I hope not, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's not going to be a big enough shift.
It's about white being normative.
Yes, exactly. So I think that, you know, obviously we need to have more board members of color. We need to have artistic directors of color, executive directors of color.
Choreographers.
Oh, choreographers, I think, is probably one of the most important ones, in my opinion, because I think still the majority of people creating work, are white men, even if it's work that's about a different type of person or culture or whatever, it's still usually made by a white man. And I find it really odd because I'm like, how can you make a work about something when you haven't even experienced that, haven't even done the research on it? So I think it's so important to have just a very diverse group of choreographers. I think a lot of people, you know, they're like, oh, we just need more women choreographers. But at the end of the day, most of the women choreographers are still white. So yes, that's a little bit going ahead, but it's still holding back so many other people, still not giving the opportunity to so many other people. So we need more women of color choreographers. We need more men of color choreographers, queer women, all of it.
It strikes me, and I really would love to know what you think, that we're in this moment of pause because of the pandemic. And we all know the way it's been devastating to the performing arts, because that's what we're talking about. But it's also a moment of pause. And obviously, things are going to have to shift even when we get to the other side of this.
I think
things are going to look very differently. So it can be a really fertile moment to address these concerns.
I definitely agree. I just think that, you know, because of this pause, because of the fact that we're not able to just go and do whatever we want, it's helping us rethink, you know, how we approach everything, what type of work we're making, what we were even doing in the past, thinking about what we were even doing in the past. I think ballet companies, especially, they're just always rushing, getting out all these different works or works that they've already done, well-known works, because it's what makes them money. They're also great works, but I just think, you know, they do what works for them. And when this happened, it kind of shut all of that down. And I think when we get back, they're not going to be able to do that same thing, because we have to think about, you know, what is this next generation going to be like? Even my generation, you know, we have TikTok, we have social media, we have all of these access ports that a lot of the generations before us never even had. So if we continuously make works that are just straight white narratives or are just old classics all the time, we're going to lose money. Ballet is going to slowly die. It's not going to become relevant, because every other art form, literally every other art form, has adapted. They have a broader sense of stories and narratives, and ballet doesn't. They're still so far behind other art forms, and there's no reason that we should be when we have all the resources to be.
You have choreographed work that was performed on stage in front of an audience, but then you've also choreographed a piece like Musing, and that was choreographed to be filmed.
Yes.
So I'm very curious about how that changes the way you conceptualize and work.
Yeah, I think that's something I've really been realizing a lot in this pandemic, but even before the pandemic. So a show that I had at Northwest Film Forum in February of 2020, it had live dance, but I also had a dance film in the middle of the live dancing. It was really fun to play around with that, but I actually realized through that I really liked making dance for film, because I think there's actually more freedom in a way of like getting the audience to feel a certain type of way, because there's so many tricks that a camera can do and so many ideas that a camera can convey that sometimes being on a live stage you can't. So that's been a really fun process to kind of just learn and work and kind of explore that type of world that, you know, a lot of us aren't used to at all. Also film, I think, you know, it just reaches more people. So that is part of the reason why I'm more drawn to film, because I want more people to see it and not necessarily have to pay as much money to go to a theater
in
the past. Because then, you know, I had all of these different people from different communities reaching out to me and saying, hey, I saw your work. Thank you so much for making that. And I was like, you know, I'm just happy you were able to see it. I'm happy you're able to see dance in a different way, in a way that you feel that actually represents you. It's super important.
Well, also with Musing, at least it seemed to me, you're overtly expressing your activism and your politics through that dance.
Yeah, definitely. With Musings, it was like, especially in the time that we were in, I felt I couldn't make any other type of piece. That was the first time I've ever made something that felt purely authentic to me as a Black woman, as a person in Seattle, all of it. So making a ballet, I'm making it for someone else. It's not like I'm not inserting myself into that and also dancing. I'm making it for someone else. I'm basing it kind of off of their movement. And a lot of the dancers that I've created on just at PNB, you know, they're not all people of color. A lot of them are white because that's who most of my colleagues are. So I can't really make things that I necessarily like want all the time because it wouldn't feel right to have a white person telling my story in that sense. So that's why this felt really special because I was working with another Black woman, Amina Minor. And we were collaborating together. She was also giving me like feedback and ideas. And we kind of had this back and forth going that, you know, doesn't always happen. It was such a great moment to be able to really collaborate with her and really speak upon what I was thinking about at the time. I realized, you know, that the basis of everything I've always wanted to do was being there for my community, making art for my community, speaking out for my community.
You also created an organization called the Seattle Project.
Yeah, so it all started actually when I was 17, turning 18. So my first year in the professional division program, I was with my roommate and I was like, you know, we should just make some works like in different places of Seattle and make a video and share it with everyone because a lot of professional division students, they don't get to perform all the time. So I was like, you know, like, let's just dance. Let's just go out and dance and show people like dancers. Cause I was like, I'm not seeing enough live dance in the streets. Like it would be good to see it in public places. And luckily the studio that I grew up at, which is Dance City Northwest. So it's in University Place, like right outside of Tacoma. We used to dance at farmers markets, at nursing homes, at schools. So my teacher saw bringing the arts to the community as a very, very important thing. And I think I'm happy that I grew up in that kind of environment because that's still instilled in me, that idea of bringing the arts to the community and making sure that every type of person feels welcome in the arts and can see themselves and can see it as a career, can see it as important, just as important as any other career. So that's kind of where the like budding started. But then it wasn't until I took an art history class in, I guess that was December of 2018. I worked with like making a choreography piece, a small piece off of like a painting in class. And I realized how fun it was to be inspired by other forms of art and also share with people that process. And I was like, you know, what if I actually worked with different types of artists in Seattle and kind of interviewed them and just created this type of project that there's new work being made that can be shown live outside for people, hopefully for free. And then on top of that, then it's also highlighting all of the incredible artists that we already have in Seattle and not just showing the major companies or, you know, the mainstream type of artists. So that's kind of where that idea came. And it's budding slowly. I feel like I have a lot of work to do to try and build it, especially during this pandemic, obviously.
I was about to say. Yeah, because you did your first presentation was in February 2020.
Yes, it was really such a special moment for me. And I'm really grateful that I was able to kind of have that happen before the pandemic because none of us knew that that was going to happen, obviously. So it made me even treasure that moment even more.
In the fall, you were in a virtual performance of Red Angel.
Yeah.
At PNB. But you also danced that on the stage.
Yeah, I did.
In front of an audience. I am so curious to know what the difference in those experiences were.
Oh man, it's different. It's different. I think, well, for one, Red Angel's the first time I did it around. It was my first year in the Corps. So that was the first major principal role I got to do. It was amazing to even be considered for it. I think I was like fourth cast and I wasn't sure if I was even going to get a show. So I got one show of it only and I got to perform it with my best friend, Chris Dariano. And we did the whole thing through. So there was the duets, and then there was like the four of us dancing together at the same time. And then it was the solos. But when we did the virtual performance 3 years later, we only did the solos for Red Angels. I liked the way I approached it more this time because I felt like I had the same type of energy, but it was more this kind of controlled energy, not giving it all away. And I think my focus was a little bit more intensified on one thing because I knew that it was going to be on a camera rather than like focusing, you know, out somewhere and trying to like focus on all these people sitting in chairs. So I think, yeah, I think some dancers say that it's a little bit sad because at the end there's no one out there in the audience, and you hear maybe like a couple claps, but you're just bowing in silence, which is sad for sure. But I also think about this moment of reflection and experience within myself during that time, not having the audience there, which has been nice to kind of revisit, remembering why I really love what I do and why I'm doing what I do, and just thinking about that exchange with myself and the camera.
That is a great place to end it, Amanda. Thank you so much.
Oh, of course. I mean, thank you for talking to me.
That's ballet dancer, choreographer, and activist Amanda Morgan. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. Subscribe to Artworks and then leave us a rating on Apple because it helps people to find us. Keep up with the Arts Endowment by following us on Twitter at NEA Arts, or by checking out our website at arts.gov. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Josephine Reed. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.